It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Vary Show is on the air.
Remembrances, stories, passing encounters, friendships with ZZ Top over the years. On the passing of Dusty Hill, if you just tuned in, at 72, far too young. Charlie, you're up, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. When I was, you know, I'm your age, when I was a freshman in high school, we paid big money to go front row seats of the summit to watch the Eliminator Tour, and our favorite song was Mexican Blackbird, and we wrote on a t-shirt and held it up and threw it on stage a couple of times, and Dusty kept kicking it off, and finally at a little break he picked it up and looked at it, and he shook his head no and pointed his finger at us and threw it back to us, and we thought that was pretty funny. We didn't know why he wouldn't play it at the time, you know, we're 14-year-old kids. And then a few years later, we're up in Dallas playing. This is a whole golf team, and we're up in Dallas playing in the state championship. And we're staying at the airport at the Hyatt there, and we somehow found a basketball hoop in the back loading dock, and the employees let us shoot hoops back there. And about 7 o'clock one night, ZZ Top walks out, his limo pulled up, and next thing you know, they're out there shooting hoops with us. And Frank was a big golfer, so he's asking us questions about what we were doing, and my buddy was talking to Dusty about the song, and he looked right at my buddy and said, he goes, "You were those guys throwing that T-shirt on the stage in Houston, weren't you?" And we were like, "Yeah." And you know, just a bunch of kids out there. They couldn't have been nicer gentlemen to us. And then another 15 years later, I'm working for Bing Crenshaw in Austin at his golf course, and I'm playing a lot of golf with Larry Gatlin, and I set a game up with him, and I drive to work one morning, and I'm the first one there, and there's this huge tour bus in the parking lot, and it's ZZ Top's tour bus, and I got kicked that day for Frank to come out and play with Ben and Larry and Coach Royal. So anyway, those guys, they were just down-home good guys and took time to, you know, we're just a bunch of high school kids and made us feel like $1 million shooting hoops with us.
You still play golf?
That's what I do I was doing that for a living until the pandemic, and then I turned 50 and I was going to try the Champions Tour, but they canceled everything because of the COVID.
What's your name?
Charlie.
Charlie what?
You want my last name? Charlie Rudd.
Okay. I thought you were going to say Charlie Epps.
No, he's too old and can't play.
So are you on staff somewhere? Are you the pro somewhere?
No, I quit my job and cashed in all of my retirement and was going to make a run for the senior tour. I have some friends out there. I mean, it's the hardest tour in the world to get on. and you make a butt ton of money when you're out there. But, you know, they cut down everything, and now they do so much testing. You get tested every day, and I had a buddy qualify. You know, he's out $3,000 for trip and everything, and then he tests the day before and tests positive, so you can't play, and he's out $3,000 for the week and never got to tee it up. And I don't have that luxury to do that, so I've just been hanging on, waiting to go out there and play again.
What is the single best course or your favorite course to play in the greater Houston area within 50 miles of downtown Houston?
That's a tough. I grew up in Kingwood, so I'd say Deerwood is probably
you ever play Whispering
your
Pines?
Oh, yeah. I've played Whispering Pines several times.
A buddy of mine's dad owns that, and he's invited me multiple times, and I've just never been able to make it work. But also because I'm not any good, and I'm afraid of getting out there and just being totally embarrassed and you know, tearing up the course. What is the most underrated course in the greater Houston area? Maybe not the best, but the hidden gem that does not get its due.
Probably Atascocita Golf Club. Been there since the 50s, and 27 holes. Hogan played there. Crenshaw played there. They used to have the All-American tournament there in the 70s. Kind of a hidden gem. No one really knows about it.
Have you played Wood Forest?
Yes, sir.
How long has it been since you played it?
About the last time they had Houston Open qualifying there, about 4 years ago.
I'm sorry. Next time you get a chance, go out and see it. Robert Marling, the head of it, the owner, has invested, I don't know how many million dollars, a lot of money into that place in about the last 2 years. And that is a jewel. I mean, it is really, really nice what he's done out there. Thanks for the call, Charlie. Let's go to Billy. You're up, Billy.
Michael. Hello?
Yep.
I want to start off by saying I'm a huge fan of yours. Listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
But my story, I don't know how much of it is folklore or whatever, but I grew up in 68 through 74. My sister, I guess you'd call her a glorified groupie of the band, but we spent a lot of time with them, and because she was the oldest of the children, she had to watch us little kids, and I was a grumpy little kid back then, I guess. These are just stories that she told me. But one day, there was nothing that could make me happy, and Dusty had made me some toast and put apple butter on it, and to this day, that's my favorite breakfast, is toast and apple butter. And I basically called to see if you knew where they got their name from.
You talking about ZZ Top?
Yes.
Well, hold on just a second, because there's several competing theories behind this.
Thoughts from the Czar, the Michael Berry Show.
So Billy's question was, do you know how ZZ Top got their name? Many people will tell you that that's the ZZ comes from a design on barn doors, and the top comes from Topps rolling papers. Or some people will say that the ZZ is for zigzag, which is rolling papers. But there's a book called Rock and Roll Gearhead that is Billy Gibbons' book. And he says that he saw a poster for ZZ Hill. And he thought the ZZ was cool. Thought that had a nice ring to it, like B.B. King. In fact, he was originally going to call them ZZ King. Then he thought, that's too close of a ripoff. But since ZZ King was the best, or the top, he named them ZZ Top. Now, we can have this argument because you like the ZZ Top story that you were first told when you were 14. I don't know that it matters. It strikes me that Billy Gibbons is probably a greater expert on the matter than all the writers who have opined. ZZ Top was the longest-running American rock band with no member changes. It helped that there were only three. But think about how big that sound is, how thick and fat that sound is with only three members. They took time off from 77 to 79, which is when they grew their beards. They were the first and last band to play McNichols Arena in Denver, Colorado. It opened in 75. They opened it. And it closed in 99. They closed it. Fun fact, all three members were born in 1949. They were 19 when the band started. On The Tonight Show, Jimi Hendrix called Billy Gibbons one of America's best young guitarists. Billy Gibbons opened some shows for Jimi Hendrix in 1968 with his then band, Moving Sidewalks. They also famously, now it's part of their lore, opened shows for Janis Joplin, also from Texas. Their worldwide Texas tour in 1976 featured a stage shaped like Texas, as well as a steer, snakes, cacti, and more. ZZ Top played their first ever concert on February 10th, 1970 at a Knights of Columbus Hall, a KC Hall, on the old US 90 outside of Houston. The gig was booked by Beaumont radio personality Al Caldwell of KLVI. We're on evenings in Beaumont on KLVI. Al Caldwell would later broadcast the band's first recordings. When the curtains opened, there was just one person in the audience. Billy Gibbons would later tell Q Magazine, "We shrugged and pressed onwards. We took a break halfway through, went out, and we bought him a Coke." I love that story. In a 1984 Saturday Night Live Democrat candidate poll, ZZ Top got 131,384 votes. Bill Hamm, who was their longtime manager up until 2006, some of you will know the story that his wife was kidnapped and then murdered, and the man was given the death penalty. I'm not going to say his name because I don't want his name to be mentioned, because he doesn't deserve that. But I was helping a friend of mine, Levi Good, 20 years ago. And he was looking to expand their pie business. If you've never had a Good Company pecan pie, brother, you are missing out. And when you've eaten an entire pie, buy another one and put it in the freezer, because they're shelf stable forever, and you can take it out and either eat it frozen, which will be delicious, or warm it up, which will be delicious, or put some ice cream over the top. But my theory on that is good barbecue doesn't need sauce. You can put it, but it doesn't need it. And good pecan pie does not need ice cream on top. You can put it there, but if it's good pecan pie, and good company, pecan pie is about as good as it gets. Their chocolate pie is also fantastic. But back to the pecan pie. They send them out with a box that has Levi Good's dad's famous phrase on there. You might give some serious thought to thanking your lucky stars that you live in Texas. And so we were looking at all the people who buy the pies and looking at how to expand that business. And there it was, number whatever it was, 5,000 on the list. They send pies. Good Company pecan pies go all over the world. A lot of corporations use it as their corporate gift. And there was the contact name, Bill Ham. I said, Levi, is that the Bill Ham? He said, yep. I think it was Lone Wolf Productions, if I remember correctly, but I might have the name wrong. Bill Ham was their manager at the time. If you were a friend of the band at Christmas time, you got a Good Company pecan pie. And to my knowledge, they probably still do that to this day. I don't know. Bill Ham handled it, but apparently the guys love it. So what made me think of that was somebody posted a picture and tagged me on Twitter that was Dusty Hill at the Good Company Cantina in the Woodlands. First of all, those fellas love Tex-Mex. They're legendary for that. And secondly, I know they love Good Company's food because that's what they choose to send to their friends for Christmas. Just a little Houston flavor for you. Let's go to Rob first. Rob, you're up, sir. Go ahead.
Rob, yeah, go ahead, brother. I just want to share a story. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
So I was having lunch at Cadillac Bar over on Shepherd. And
one of their favorites.
Right, table next to us was Dusty Hill, and with some obvious record industry type people. They're really cool looking people. So we sat there and had lunch with him. At the end of lunch, he had what was left of his fajitas or whatever packaged up and put in a to-go box. Walked out and gotten this really cool looking blacked out Bentley. And from that time on, I've never been embarrassed to get it to go when I finish my meal.
If it's good enough for Dusty Hill, by golly, it's good enough for me. Come on, I could use some Cadillac Grill right about now. There is no good Tex-Mex in Aspen, Colorado, and it makes me sad. That's what I need right now. One of those bands that you have heard so many times that you forget what it was like when you first heard this song, when you first saw it on MTV, and when you first heard it on the radio. And it becomes so much of almost the background that you have to actually stop and think about their music to appreciate how good this was when it came out and how big this was. Now, I know some of you out there, the curmudgeons, I know you. I know who you are. I know what you are. I know your type. You're the hipsters from that time. You don't see it, but you are. You're the Grateful Dead fans that hated Touch of Grey because people who weren't deadheads actually listened to them and liked them, and you hated them for doing a song that, you know, people other than you listened to. I'm glad they went mainstream and widely commercially successful because that caused a lot more people than would have to go back and dig into their deep stuff. And a lot of people did, starting with Eliminator. And I think that's a good thing. All right, Ramon, I want you to rank for me. I want you to send it by email so I have it, I can have it in front of me. I want you to rank for me, 3-2-1, the three greatest ZZ Top songs. And then I want you to rank them 3-2-1, your favorite. And you have 2 minutes. All right, let's start with Michael. Michael, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Howdy. It's real kind of funny. It's me and my best friend at the time back in 1975 were looking to buy some new bull ropes. We kind of got into bull riding, and we went down to this store called Gary's Hats and Boots, which is down there, old Market Square area downtown. And we're in there, and we're looking at these new bull ropes, and in walks Dusty and Billy. And I look at my friend Brian. I said, Brian, that's the ZZ Top guys. He said, I know it. Well, they walk in there, and they started pointing at cowboy hats and boots and belts. Said they wanted them in the little bitty brim, which they, you know, we saw that at Memorial Stadium. And they walked up. We were talking to them, and they looked at us, and they said, where are y'all from? We said, Klein. They said, yeah, y'all are them confused kickers, aren't you? Because our hair was a little bit long, and, yeah. And our hats, and our buck-stitch belts, and nicest guys. They were just, you know, and that was before the big time. And it's one of those little memories I just walk around with.
I love it. Thanks for the call. It's funny to think, because I was too young to know it. I just hear about it. But it's funny to think that having hair to your shoulders would get you harassed or maybe your butt kicked in the not so distant past in this country, especially in the South. And to think that artists like Charlie Daniels and Hank Jr. had to put their capital on the line to say, hey, back off the hippies. They're not our problem. And you think about the bridging of the gap from Ramon has submitted his list. For those of you who are keeping the clock, he always sticks to the time. I didn't want you to think he was taking extra time, and he never, ever looks it up. But to think how Willie and Waylon and Charlie Daniels and Hank Jr. were able to bridge that gap from kind of the hippies to the cowboys and bring them into the same bars. You know, Ramon, I'm going to say this without thinking about it, but if I were to pick the bands that a true blank kicker, a shoot kicker, I'll say, boot wearing, belt wearing, Pasadena, Texas resident, outside of country, the bands those guys most liked would have been ZZ Top, Allman Brothers, Skinnerd, CCR. Who am I missing? But I'll bet you ZZ Top had as many fans that were traditional neoclassical country fans as they did fans who were now what we would call classic rock fans. And the irony of all of that is that their true roots were blues. All right, so here is Ramon's list of the three best ZZ Top, their greatest songs. Number three, Legs. Number two, Sharp Dressed Man. And number one, LaGrange. You know what, Ramon? I'm proud of you. You resisted the urge to go pull something out that you and only you know to show that you're smarter than the rest of us, and you actually picked three popular songs, and I will endorse this list. Legs, number three. Sharp Dressed Man, number two. LaGrange, number one. And Ramon's three favorites. Number three, Jesus Just Left Chicago. Great song. Number two, Sure Got Cold After the Rain. And number one,
The Michael Berry Show. This is The Michael Berry Show.
If you're down in Acuna and you ain't up to being alone, don't spend all your money on just any honey that's grown. Go find the Mexican blackbird and send all your troubles back home. They all call her puta, 'cause no one really knows her name. She works the cantina, dancing and a loving's her trade.
Sundance Head sent me a message. Thanks for the tribute to Dusty. He believed in me when I was just a kid. He wanted to sign me, but Pop said I was too young. Then when I was 21, I met back up with Dusty. He brought me in along with Frank Beard to co-write an album because they were looking for new material. Then a year later, he gave me my first contract, brought me to Austin to record at his studio. He was a very humble man who would do anything for you. He and his wife, Chuck, would have me and Misty, that's Sundance's wife, over to their home in Houston just to talk and eat. Man, what a man. So many stories with him, as well as many he shared about their amazing career. Ramon, who have I got? Mike, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead, buddy.
Hey, brother. In 1980, I was getting out of the Army, and I get home. My dad says, "Have you ever heard of ZZ Top?" And I go, "Yeah." And he pulls out the Fandango album cover, and he says, "These two guys escorted your grandmother from Atlanta on the airplane. And she said they're just the nicest young men. When they got to DFW, they walked her through the airport to her next flight to Austin, and she just doted on them." So that was just,
I love that.
Just, hell yeah, yeah, great, great people.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Humility is one of the things that comes up so often with those guys. They didn't want to be unlike anybody else. I first met Billy Gibbons at Downing Street, which was my favorite bar to drink at in all the time I've lived in Houston. Well, I didn't drink till 99, but Downing Street was the greatest bar. There'll never be a bar for me to just sit and smoke a cigar and have a beer that will rival what Downing Street was. And they had, they weren't known for their food. In fact, a lot of people didn't know they had food. But they had a roast beef sandwich that I would eat every day. And it was, I don't know what the bread was, but it was delicious. And they would do applewood cheddar. They had a homemade mayonnaise and a thick-cut roast beef. It was almost like a prime rib. And they would do that with chips. I would get double chips, and I would have them do two parts mayonnaise, one part horseradish that I would dip the chips in. And you would never have to order a beer. They would anticipate when you were at that level. And I would hold court there every day after city council. What a place. And Billy would come in there. And I didn't want to pester him, but the guy I was with knew him very well and introduced us. And he said, give me a call if you need anything. But it wasn't one of those, like, really give me a call. It was just, here's my card. So he handed me his card. And if you remember Downing Street, it was real dark in there. It was kind of like an English pub. I go to the restroom, and I can't wait to see what Billy Gibbons' card looks like. And it said, Billy Gibbons, friend of Eric Clapton. Brian, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead.
You do that to me every time with that food stuff. Now I'm starving to death. I went and saw the ZZ Top at the Rock Rally 3 years ago, and I consider myself one of the best ZZ Top copying guitar players ever. I've been playing since I was 10 or 11 years old, and once I discovered them, and I've really been, you know, just getting after, you know, copying their stuff. We, you know, went up there to see those guys, and I stood there in total disbelief of the fact that I had been playing these things wrong for the last 20 years. And I want to just say something about the professionalism of their playing. Blues bands are one in a thousand, one in a million. I mean, you know, you see blues bands everywhere, and we've all been raised on the blues. But if you're a guitar player and you can hear my voice, go back and watch the live versions of all the Billy Gibbons stuff. You're playing it wrong. Not to mention Frank Beard. I started getting into drumming a while back, and I realized two people I could not follow to save my life. I didn't realize they were as good as they were. John Bonham, obviously, and Frank Beard. Every time I would sit there with my headphones and ZZ Top would come on, I would almost get a queasy feeling in my stomach, like, well, this isn't going to go well. Well, let's go ahead and give it a shot anyway. But I just wanted to say that a lot of people, you know, they might think, you know, especially guitar players, you know, I was just blown away by the effortlessness that he put into his guitar playing. It was like he wasn't even playing the guitar, and I'm over here trying to, you know, I'm all up and down the neck, and I'm you know, holding position chords and things that I, you know, I thought I was doing right, and I watched him do it, and I said, you've got to be kidding me. That is probably one of the greatest blues guitar players, that, you know, hands down. So I just wanted to throw that at you.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Rush Limbaugh used to say that he made it look easy, that he made talk radio look easy. And then you see a guy like Alec Baldwin, who I hate his politics, but he is a talented actor. Don't tell me he's not. Go watch Glengarry Glen Ross. The dude is a very talented actor. I hate when people say that somebody's a bad actor because you don't like their politics. That's not true. He's a very good actor who's an absolute whack in life. But Alec Baldwin tried to sit in and do a talk show, and 10 seconds in, he's asking for calls, and by 2 minutes in, he's going, do we have any calls? No, Mr. Baldwin, we don't have any calls. There's nobody on the line. Rush Limbaugh made it look easy. Dusty Hill made it look easy. But the takeaway of 3 hours of talking about ZZ Top is all the people they ran into, not one email, not one text, not one call to tell you they were a-holes or jerks or dismissive or rude. That's special. Rest in peace, Dusty Hill.